A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging these arts organizations. Today, we'll take a look at the recently announced merger between two of the Princeton area's major cultural institutions. The Princeton Symphony Orchestra and Princeton Festival are joining forces, bringing together the orchestra's concert season and educational programs with the festival's summer chamber opera and other concert performances. My guests will be PSO Executive Director Mark Ace, Music Director Rossin Milanoff, and Festival Director Gregory Guerin. Let's start off with a look at some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. The groundbreaking Dutch composer Louis Andreasen has passed away at the age of 82. According to the New York Times, Andreasen's efforts to push for changes in music and encourage performances of more contemporary works began early in his career, and he founded two ensembles in the 1970s based on improvisation and experimental music. He wrote commissions for the San Francisco Symphony, Los Angeles Philharmonic, New York Philharmonic, and NBC Symphony Orchestra, among others. The New Jersey Symphony Orchestra will return to its home venue at the New Jersey Performing Arts Center July 24th for its first indoor live concert since the start of the pandemic. The concert will feature works by the four composers participating in its Edward T. Cohn Composition Institute, which will take place in the week leading up to the performance. The orchestra this week also announced details of its 2021-2022 season, which opens October 8th with the Voodoo Violin Concerto, performed by composer and resident artistic catalyst Daniel Bernard Rumain, Beethoven Symphony No. 7, and a co-commission by Michael Abels. The season programs will also include works by Mahler, Tchaikovsky, Gershwin, Copland, and Mendelssohn, music by contemporary composers Joan Tower, Jesse Montgomery, Conrad Tau, and Mason Bates, and new commissions by Thomas Addis, Wynton Marsalis, and Vivian Lee. Performances will return to the NJSO's regular venues of NJPAC in Newark, the State Theater of New Jersey in New Brunswick, Richardson Auditorium in Princeton, the Mayo Performing Arts Center in Morristown, and the Count Basie Center for the Arts in Red Bank. Blanca Ziska, who co-founded Philadelphia's Wilma Theater with her husband, will be turning over the reins of the theater at the end of July. In a statement, the theater said Ziska will step back from day-to-day operations to become artistic director emeritus, with plans to maintain an artistic relationship with the theater. Ziska and her husband Jerry adapted Animal Farm for the then-collaborative company Wilma Project in 1978, and then took on leadership and renamed the company the Wilma Theater in 1981. Ziska and the theater in early 2020 announced that the trio of artistic directors would rotate through leadership for the subsequent three seasons. The theater plans a tribute to Ziska in the coming season. The Annenberg Center for the Performing Arts has changed its name to Penn Live Arts, part of the 50th anniversary celebration of the Art Center on the campus of the University of Pennsylvania. In its announcement, the Art Center said the name change reflects a more expansive variety of events, including early and new music, circ and digital offerings, and presentations beyond the center's physical space. The center also plans to become more integrated with the university and Philadelphia communities. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. This past year has provided much time and opportunity for arts organizations to rethink their directions and future, including expanded opportunities for partnerships and collaborations with other groups. In the Princeton music world, two of the region's major players have decided to join forces, the Princeton Symphony Orchestra and the Princeton Festival. Founded in 1980, the orchestra presents a classical and pop season of concerts and offers educational programs, including its PSO Bravo for elementary school students and a partnership with the Youth Orchestra of Central Jersey. The Princeton Festival has grown over the years to include a major opera production, as well as musical theater, jazz, and chamber music events since it was created in 2005 by Richard Tang Yuk, who stepped down from the organization at the end of last summer. The merger presents the potential for enhanced year-round programming for both organizations. Symphony Executive Director Mark Ace said the merger made sense for a number of reasons, and I spoke with him about these possibilities, as well as with Rossin Milanoff, the orchestra's Edward T. Cohn Music Director, and Festival Director Gregory Guerin, who was tapped by the festival last fall as Acting Artistic Director.
Really, I suppose we can all blame a lot of things on the pandemic. It gave us a different kind of time to think about different things, but also certainly put us on course to consider what we take for granted and think of what is everything going to look like when we come out of this. And that's certainly the frame of mind I was in when I became aware of the news that Richard Tanyak was departing the Princeton Festival at the end of last summer. And it made me start thinking, what is the relationship between these two organizations, and shouldn't we really be working together towards a common goal? So that's how I approached members of the PSO board with that idea. And we have all immediately agreed that this was absolutely something worth exploring further. And so we then approached the board of the Princeton Festival. And I think pretty quickly reached that consensus that this was a very valuable concept to explore. That process began back in November of last year. And I must say, it's been a wonderful period of, what is it now, nearly 8 months to bring us to today. It certainly brought, I would think, each organization closer. You know, we suffered a little bit from separation and not being spending enough time together in the year leading up to that. And having a project like this to work on really forced us to spend a lot of time, unfortunately, over Zoom. But we have now all met each other in person, and it was a wonderful period of, I won't even call it negotiation, it's really discussion about how this idea that makes so much sense can work to the greater benefit of far beyond the two organizations, but to the community that we exist in and that we serve.
Greg, do you want to add to that?
When our board chair, Benedict von Schroeder, approached me and said, well, the PSO folks have approached us and we're talking about a possible merger with the Princeton Festival, I was and am very much in favor of it. And it's a situation in which we can be stronger together versus apart. And to that end, I just see so many wonderful potential collaborations. I see many potential projects. And even with the PSO, the Princeton Festival has collaborated with the Princeton Symphony prior to this. The Princeton Symphony and the Princeton Festival collaborated on a wildly successful project back in 2016 called Voices of Light, where we played The Passion of Joan of Arc by Richard Einhorn. And then we also showed the silent film by Carl Theodor Dreyer, which was also in collaboration with Princeton Garden Theater, which is our independent movie house here in Princeton. And so the organizations coming together created a wonderful, interdisciplinary, fabulously successful concert experience. And our Princeton Festival patrons still rave about that particular performance and that particular collaboration. And so seeing the potential to do more projects like that, and even on a bigger scale, that makes me very excited. And I really look forward to working closer with Mark and Rossin to make that happen.
If I may add to the two gentlemen that expressed their opinion about this collaboration, I think Princeton is a very special place. I have had the privilege of spending almost 11 years in this community. This is an extremely intellectual, curious community, always on the forefront of what is happening in the cultural processes around the world. And I think that it's not a coincidence that that particular collaboration, which is sort of a one of a kind, as far as I know, in recent history of our business, happened in Princeton. Because we do have the tradition of the festival. We do have almost 30 years of tradition of the Princeton Symphony. And we have always, both organizations, been on the forefront of innovating not only our concert format, but also looking for new ways to wrap around everything that our community can offer and is still offering in terms of art, in terms of intellectual discussion, in terms of all the ideas that appear on a daily basis as ideas that we have to address as a society of both citizens and cultural leaders. So I'm very excited that we have the opportunity to sort of enter the next stage of the Princeton Symphony, this time with the Princeton Festival along, and to create something that has never been created before. And I think there is room for this. There is a desire, and the enthusiasm in our community comes from looking into the future and seeing the potential of what could be done creatively in our very special town.
Well, I wanted to kind of delve into that a little bit. Obviously, you're in the very early stages of this, but I wanted to give each of you an opportunity to talk a bit how this merger really expands opportunities for both organizations. Princeton Symphony mentioned in the press release, this gives you much more opportunities during the summer. Princeton Festival, obviously, you've got your now in-house orchestra and some other opportunities. At this point, what are you looking at as far as enhancing what you've been able to offer?
I'll start because you already know more than we know about what we can officially share with you. Because we're coming out of this strange time, and then we're only starting to get together and, you know, talk about what does this all mean and what are the opportunities that present. Of course, we've talked with specific ideas, but until we shape that into what is going to be the public face of this new organization, it's difficult for us to really share specifics about that. What excites me on the administrative level is this is a coming together of two organizations that will result in a larger and thereby the possibility of being more specialized administrative staff that increases our capacity to take on ambitious projects all year round. And so that's the kind of thing that should excite Rossin, because it means, don't quote me on this, Rossin, but it means less often I'm going to tell you we think you don't have the resources to do that thing you want to do. But of course, he'll come up with bigger ideas. And that's what's exciting, because now we can dream bigger.
What really excites me, it's the opportunity for us to raise our level of what we present. For the reasons that Mark said, that we have a little bit more muscle, both artistic and financial. And both organizations, I think, have always strived to do the best in their own area. So obviously combining organizations and not having to have a lot of duplication of services would free a little bit more funds for us to focus on our desire to be both innovative, very inclusive, to sort of respond with not only the type of programs that we are known for that could have been described a little bit more traditional, but perhaps to invest a lot more artistic energy into innovative projects and experimental projects in addition to everything else that we are known for, both on the festival side and on the Princeton Symphony side. So this is what excites me. And also to combine our connections, and I'm sure that Greg will speak a little bit about the tradition that they have established with so many of the artists that have been coming year after year, and the audience loves them and supports them greatly, but we'll be combining that with perhaps an extended circle of artistic partners that would make the festival even more interesting and vital and reach even higher artistic heights.
Well, thank you, Rossin. And the Princeton Festival, since its inception, has been known for taking artistic risks, both in terms of how big the productions are and what kind of productions we do. I mean, for such a small organization, we were able to mount productions like Nixon in China back in 2019. And as I said before, Voices of Light back in 2016. And so we were always an organization that was willing to take risks. And so with the combined resources of the festival and the Princeton Symphony, that gives us a more robust infrastructure in which to continue our programming, continue to feature many of the artists that our patrons love, and also introduce those patrons to our Princeton Symphony base, and also through Rossin's connections, introduce many of the Princeton Symphony's beloved artists to the Princeton Festival, and really enhance what the Princeton Festival does as well.
That sort of touches on another question aspect I wanted to look at, and that's the potential for audience expansion, broadening your audiences. Certainly, you've both been traditionally based in Princeton, but to what extent have your audiences overlapped, and to what extent is there now opportunity to bring those that hadn't been involved in both into this in some form?
There, of course, is some overlap in our audiences if you look back over the last few years, but not significantly so, which is, I think, a very good thing, and something that's central to the following of any arts organization or individual artist is the trust of an audience that they build. And so we will work very hard to nurture that trust. And if you think of the PSO subscribers, they have a certain set of expectations of us that they can rely on. And whether they're familiar with what we offer or not, there's a feeling of comfort. And so we want to transfer that feeling to everything that's going to be happening in June. And the same will be for long-term loyal festival supporters. And so we want to not assume that we will earn that trust. And we realize that it's a very precious thing, but in a way that is one of the biggest assets that any arts organization can build over time.
Exactly. And to piggyback off what Mark said, it's great when you have people who are supportive of each other's organizations, and that's really a key way in which to bring those audiences over and earn that trust. So, I mean, Mark and Rossin have been amazing in reaching out, and they will continue to reach out to our festival audiences and earn their trust in the way that they have dealt with their own audiences. And my presence will ensure that our festival audiences will be able to trust the Princeton Symphony's leadership. And also, it's a way for me to introduce myself and what the festival has done to our Princeton Symphony audiences. So since we're all together on this, it enables us to build a base of trust in which I think there can be a lot of overlap. And I'm very excited about that.
I think that it is absolutely true, and I absolutely support what Greg and Mark talked about. And the hardest thing in the arts to earn is to know that whenever you have an event, the audience is not going to look at what is on the program. Sort of like going to a great restaurant and sitting at the table and knowing that the chef is going to prepare something that you are going to like, and you're going to expand your sort of taste buds in a sense. This is what I think Mark alluded to, that there is a lot of people from the loyal audience of the Princeton Symphony that they come to the concert because they trust the brand. And I'm sure that this is the case with the Princeton Festival. So I think that opportunity for us not to have the events, because we both organizations, we just don't have events that end with the last curtain call. Normally the concert continues afterwards with a reception, with an opportunity for the people to meet the artists, to also before the concerts, we always have something that gets you in the mood, or you learn more about what is going to be there. So those are important things that perhaps could exist only in our relatively lower paced, stress-free town of Princeton. And in our bigger neighbors, such as New York and Philadelphia, you're going to be fighting to be the first one to enter the Lincoln Tunnel or to get on the on 76 and head back home. So this is something that slows the pace down and allows us to focus on experiencing the art deeper the way it was meant to be, without the challenges of our daily routine and daily lives. So I think this is the most important thing, and this is why I think people are coming back to both organizations, that there is something old-fashioned about it, the way you make friends and the way you experience art together with your friends and your family.
Mark, you mentioned at the beginning that a lot of this, the seeds were first planted with COVID and having all that time to think and re-examine and step back. The pandemic has also provided opportunities to explore, for both organizations, to explore new ways to bring your traditional programs and not so traditional programs to audiences, whether it's online or you've both done some outdoor performances. From that perspective, what types of thoughts do you have, again, in this early stage of where these types of opportunities can lead to new directions?
Well, it's absolutely right. And, you know, if I think of the past few years, we all like to be innovative and we have interesting ideas. And I think we do. It's very hard to implement some of those because you're quite constricted by certain set of things that are what you normally do. And when you take away everything that's normal, it makes it a lot easier to consider and try new things. And I think that that's something that we have ahead of us in the next year, particularly still, with still some uncertainty for us in what our venue might be in the next few months. And it allows us to try things that may have seemed not really viable before, and now we're forced to make them viable. So I think that's hugely positive. And a very basic example, in the last year, we, without the ability to have an indoor venue, looked at Morven Museum and Garden to have some very informal chamber music concerts down by the pool house. And I can confidently tell you that we would not have considered doing that 2 years ago. Maybe I shouldn't be that confident, but I didn't think of doing it 2 years ago. And they were so successful that we will continue to do those because so many people have called us and spoken to us and said, we love this so much. Please don't stop doing it once you're back in Richardson. So right there, we have a new line of concerts that came out of this situation. And there are other things that we're looking at for the next year. And I think that a lot of that approach is going to feed into what we see as being the structure of the festival in the next season and beyond. And of course, Morven has been just such a heaven send for all of us in what kind of facility it's been, and also the way that the staff of that organization has welcomed us, both the Princeton Symphony and the Princeton Festival in the last few weeks. Last fall, quite literally taking us off the street and making it possible for us to have those events. And I think that that's a very exciting thing that has started there, again, for Princeton. It's so central to the town, just a beautiful setting. And so I think that there's a lot that could happen there in the future.
With Morven, they have just been such wonderful hosts. And I speak for the festival when I say we are just so grateful for them for hosting us during the month of June and enabling us to try new concerts in different types of settings. So when we decided to put the performances in Stockton Education Center and then later on decided to have in-person audiences in pods in that beautiful garden, we were making decisions of, okay, how many people can we fit in this garden? What kinds of programming can we do? And for those folks who aren't yet comfortable coming out for an in-person performance, how can we best reach them? And that's when we started experimenting with technology and working with Tom Wisnowski and his television crew and Jim Allington of Princeton University to create these beautiful live streams. And so we were not only reaching the Princeton community, but we were also reaching people all over the world. And like Mark, I received phone calls, particularly after the Baroque series and the opera series that we did in June, saying, you need to continue this somehow. You need to go back to Morven. We love having the concerts outside. We love just sitting in a garden and hearing great music. So I think that will be an integral part of what we do going forward in some way.
I'm absolutely agreeing with the emphasis that both of you put on the Morven Museum, because I think going forward, that sense of intimacy which this place projects and puts its stamp on almost every event is something I think that is going to be very important in the future, to get people closer to the art, closer to the performers, closer to something that might be happening in your own yard, in your own living room. And particularly for the fact that a very significant part of our function in the future is going to be happening in the summer months, I think it's wonderful to have that outdoor element, which is a trademark of almost any great summer festival that you could think of in the world. You could only bring here as an example Tango World, and it would be enough to sort of imagine the beautiful green lawn there and the music being sort of in that beautiful frame, mixing the sound of music with the sound of nature. And this is what happens in this place, and it's right in the middle of Princeton, like an oasis that was simply waiting for the art to arrive there. So I am confident that in the future we will have to have events there, because that would be our important feeling of a summer festival that the Morven Auditorium and Museum would provide. But also I think that there is no, what we learned during COVID is that we could reach actually a lot more people than what we did during our in-house concerts. This is very important, because in addition to being live performing organizations, now we have the opportunity to think about being also a TV station, or anything that has to do not only with the music, but also with the very high level of recording what is happening on stage, and thinking about all these elements that we are so used to being surrounded with, whether on our computers or on the TV screens. So that's a great challenge and a great opportunity for us to provide this service, not only for the people that would be there in person, but also for everyone that we could reach worldwide, as Greg said.
That was Rossin Milanoff, the Edward G. Cohn Music Director of the Princeton Symphony Orchestra, who joined me in conversation along with Orchestra Executive Director Mark Ace and Princeton Festival Director Gregory Guerin. Details about the upcoming season will be announced at a later date. You can find more information on the symphony at princetonsymphony.org and the festival at princetonfestival.org. I hope you enjoy the conversations I bring you each week on Atempo about the changes and challenges facing the performing arts. But remember that programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening to Atempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. Atempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.